Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Peril and Paperbacks, a Paranormal Cozy Mystery by L. Ren Burke, narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Chapter 1.
Daughter.
I ground my teeth. Just hearing that word out of his nefarious mouth enraged me. He could call me daughter all he wanted, but he'd never be a real father.
Fennec? It took you long enough.
A snort shot up my nose, causing the pile of snot hanging out in there to get sucked back into my sinuses. I coughed. I'd been crying on and off for days. 4 days. 4 days of salty cheeks and a runny nose.
It took me long enough? You've got to be kidding me.
Thursday, 4 days ago. I came pounding into my house after spending the night at Rudy's, where I'd left my dogs to sleep the morning away. Starting in the kitchen, I threw everything out of every cabinet, every crevice. Somehow managed to move the fridge on my own, even stuck my hand in the garbage disposal. Finding nothing, I ripped apart the rest of my house. Every pillow, knick-knack, book, dog toy, bottle of shampoo, and roll of toilet paper ended up on the floor and stayed there as I continued to search. A pile of recording devices on the kitchen counter slowly grew as I worked, the tension in my body growing alongside it. Finally, taped to the bottom of my dresser, I found my real quarry. Eyeshadow palettes, blushes, lipsticks, and mascaras. The bottom of my double dresser was thick with counterfeit makeup, like a teen who just didn't know when to stop applying. I patted the dark wood as I leaned against it, finally taking a breath.
You don't need all that makeup, girl. You're beautiful just how you are.
Drooping dandelions, they'd had to know I'd find the makeup here. I guess it was just a way to remind me of the access they had to me. That they could get into my house, kidnap my mother. That their threats of planting evidence on Rudy or Ori should be taken seriously. My relief at finding the counterfeit makeup my apparently master villain sister had planted in my house lasted only a minute. I gathered it all and tossed it onto the counter next to the listening devices she'd also planted. Continuing my search, I found 2 more bugs, but no more blush. After gathering all the recording devices and dropping them onto a workbench in my garage, I grabbed my hammer. I didn't know what Fennec looked like, but my mind assigned a sneering, beady-eyed man to each recording device as I brought the hammer down over and over. Only dust remained when I finished. Sobbing on the garage floor for a good hour seemed appropriate, so I let all the worry, all the guilt over my mother and Natalie, who'd just resurfaced from months of being lost in the energy plane, surge through me. Then I picked myself up and cleaned my house. Ori was coming over to Rudy's to distract me, but not for a couple hours, so I went for a run. A long, long run. Friday, 3 days ago. Irene came over before the roosters could even do their morning calls. Neither of us could sleep. I tossed around in Rudy's bed all night, trying to rest, but my mind would only show me Audrey and Natalie tied up. While I had no plans to sleep at my townhouse anytime soon, not after it had been tainted by Fawn, I came back for the one activity that might calm me: baking. Neither Rudy nor Irene had equipment or ingredients to bake, while I had mountains of it. When I'd ransacked the kitchen the day before, I'd even found a few things that had slipped my memory. How could I have forgotten my weird cookie-cutter phase from a decade ago? A cutter shaped like a giant tooth after Ori recovered from her wisdom teeth extraction. A David Bowie cutter for an 80s party. A shoe cutter for when my mom finally donated the 70 pairs of shoes she'd been clinging to since before my birth. I mean, a shoe cookie cutter? Really? That had been a strange time in my life. Pretzel came into the kitchen where Irene and I drank coffee. Decaf, we did not need more stimulation, and sat at my feet. I hadn't wanted to leave the dogs at Rudy's place all day, so I'd brought them home. Blueberry had been quite happy to curl up in his spot on the couch, but Pretzel was sticking close to me, as he had been the past couple days.
He leaned against my leg and sent a soothing purple light through our connection. I patted his head. Aw, thank you, buddy. I love you so much, Pretzel Poo. A second later, I laughed, my first one in days, as he sent through an image of the treat bag. He wants a treat, I told Irene. I'll do it, she declared. The boys were good at cheering her up, too. She went to the living room so Blueberry didn't have to stray too far from the couch. Meanwhile, my mind went right back to obsessing over how the kidnappees were doing and why Fennec was taking so long to let me know what mystery he wanted me to solve. He'd obviously had something specific in mind, so what the frickin' fruit flies was it? Noticing my white-knuckled grip on my mug, Irene said, You're going to break that mug. Isn't it your favorite? I looked down. I hadn't even realized I'd grabbed my May you have the confidence of a mediocre white man mug. I mean, that's just good advice for any situation, even this one. I took a deep breath. He's doing this on purpose, Alara. He wants us to feel desperate. A sob rose from my chest, but I forced it back down. I threw my shoulders back and opened the pantry. I was a mediocre white man, dang it. I wouldn't let Fennec get to me. We'd get Audrey and Natalie back. Maybe I'd buy a congrats on not being kidnapped anymore cookie cutter when we did. On the drive over, I decided that we'd bake old family recipes passed down from my dad, Bob Beatty, not that imposter in New York. We were quiet as we worked. This wasn't our first stress baking session. I opted to mix by hand whenever possible so I could take my feelings out on the bowl, except for frosting. If my stand mixer was good for anything, it was frosting. By 4 o'clock, we'd run out of places to put baked goods and work surfaces and ingredients. But we didn't get through all the recipes I pulled, I whined. It's okay, hun, Irene said, rubbing my back. We got through everything except your grandma's sauerkraut chocolate cake and green tomato pie. To be honest, neither of those sound particularly appetizing. I moved away and leaned against the fridge. I don't even have sauerkraut or green tomatoes. Or flour anymore, she looked around. What are we going to do with all this? With both our stomachs in a constant state of motion, we'd barely eaten anything the last couple days. We could take it over to the homeless shelter, I suggested. I love that. Something good can come from all this negativity. A couple hours later, I found myself on the floor of Rudy's bathroom, holding my phone tightly. He was at work, and Irene had gone to update Jimmy. She told him the night of the kidnapping what was going on. Everything from her psychic abilities to my nefarious father and Audrey's work with Natalie. He'd been a bit gobsmacked, which was more than understandable, but he'd come around quickly. Ori had wanted to come entertain me at Rudy's, but two people had called out at the restaurant, so she'd had to stay at work. So I was alone. I'd even locked Pretzel and Blueberry out of the bathroom. I stared and stared and stared at my phone, but my father didn't call. It did ding to alert me about a pizza coupon and a sale on dog bandanas, so that was good to know. The hours passed until I woke up to Rudy scooping me into his arms and carrying me to bed, where I cried into his shoulder, Blueberry's neck, and Pretzel's back until sleep took me again. Saturday, 2 days ago. Enough of this. I'm sick of it. I want to do something. The baking yesterday didn't count as doing something? Irene asked. I paced the length of her living room and dining room, Blueberry following me back and forth. I want to do something about this situation. We might be at Fennec's mercy, but that doesn't mean we're powerless. In fact, it's time for me to become more powerful. No more wallowing. I want you to attack me. My aunt sighed. I'm guessing you don't want me to tackle you. Brighton, my aunt's cat, sat on the dining table so he'd have the high ground over my dogs, who lounged in front of the unlit adobe fireplace. I'm more than happy to attack you. That's right, he could talk, but only to me. Irene thought he had been a person in a previous life, and somehow retained his verbal abilities when he reincarnated. All that was a bit over my head, so I just nodded and accepted that I could talk to this particular cat. Turning toward the fluffy ivory feline, I told him, "Not that kind of attack, but I don't doubt that you'd be happy to attack me." Brighton was more than a bit cantankerous. I paced toward Irene. "Hit my mind. Give me everything you've got. I need to learn to defend myself." She stood. "I agree. I just hadn't wanted to push you the last couple of days, and I needed time to process everything too. But now you're right. As much as I have no desire to attack your mind, if I can even figure out how, it's necessary." I stopped pacing and stood with my feet hip distance apart. "Do it. I have faith you'll figure it out." And she did. It took some time to get it right, but she knew enough about Fennec's early attempts at attacking minds to implement it herself. Her first tries were easily blocked, but once she figured it out, I found my face on the cold tile, my hands clutching my head as terrible memories rushed through my brain and screams fled my body. Let's just say Pretzel and Blueberry did not like that. Hours passed without me noticing. "Hit me again," I demanded, bent over my knees, gasping for breath. Irene's legs buckled, and she barely caught herself on an armchair. I rushed to her side. "Irene!" Arms around her torso, I settled her in the chair. "Are you okay?" I looked around for her water bottle and noticed the sun setting for the first time. "Holy shitsus, we've been at it all day." I plopped on the floor in front of her. "I'm so sorry." "It's okay. I'm fine, really. You made such great progress. That last time you threw me out of your mind so quickly that it knocked me off balance." She squeezed my shoulder. "Totally worth it. I'm so proud of you." "Thanks, Irene. Let me find us something to eat, and I'll make some of the Catherwood psychic recovery tea." After we ate, Irene's phone rang and she snuck off into her bedroom to answer it. So I grabbed my crystal ball from my bag and checked on my mother and Natalie. They rested on cots next to each other, their chests slowly rising and falling. Vince, their captor, scrolled on his phone nearby. Irene came back. "Bertram's going to California to search for Audrey and Natalie. I thought it was too dangerous. If the gang sees us coming, they'll dispose of them, as Fawn put it." Tears formed in my eyes, but I willed them away. "And it sounded like she was going out there, which means she'll be cloaking them. Though she must not be there yet, because I'd been able to use my crystal ball to see Audrey and Natalie again." My aunt sat back down. "Yes, your uncle will be careful. He's going to search for them the old-fashioned way. Talk to the facility where Natalie had been staying. Figure out how the gang got them out of there. Try to track their movements. He won't approach if he finds them, but we need to know where they are in case it becomes clear that you and I won't be successful with whatever task Fennec gives you." "He'll just barge in and somehow rescue them?" She raised an eyebrow at me. "No, he'll call the police. At that point, it'll be worth the risk." I blew out a breath. "That makes sense. Why is he going alone, though? Aren't there like a million Catherwoods to help him?" Irene shifted in the chair. "Eleanor hasn't told them." "What? Are you serious? I mean, I get not announcing it at a family picnic, but from the way you described the family, I imagined some kind of family council who discussed important matters." "You're not wrong, but the more people involved, the higher the risk one of them does something stupid that pisses off Fennec." I hung my head. "Right. I guess if Bertram goes alone, he'll be less noticeable. If he brought a bunch of people, my father's goons would be more likely to spot them." "Exactly. Now, let's find a movie to watch while we drink more tea. Is Ori still joining us later?" "Yep, very soon." Narrowing my eyes, I said, "How about a good revenge movie?" "Nothing too dark, please." "The First Wives Club? I know I could watch three spunky women take down their ex-husbands." Maybe it will give us some good ideas, she said with a wink. Sunday, one day ago. This is ridiculous. This is Fennec. He's playing games, Irene said.
How long will he draw this out? Rudy asked.
We sat under a beautiful tree on a cozy patio at the shop known only as Coffee. I wore a fuzzy jacket to protect me from the practically Arctic 50-degree January temperature, but at least the sun shined, making the temperature more tolerable. Birds chirped above us. Kids laughed in the park directly across from us in the town square. Pretzel and Blueberry sat near Rudy, staring as he ate a blueberry muffin. A gorgeous morning if there ever was one. And I barely noticed any of it. My gut churned, not enjoying the oat milk latte I'd downed in practically one gulp. My leg wasn't enjoying it either, as it bounced so hard that Irene's still scalding tea kept jumping out of her cup. Did I forget to ask for decaf, or was I that wound up all on my own? My aunt rubbed her chin. Who knows? If he wants this mystery task done, then he'll have to contact Alara eventually. Or Fawn will contact her.
Urgh.
I leaned back, crossing my arms like a petulant child. Maybe Fawn just hasn't gotten a new phone yet since I broke hers. Rudy squeezed my shoulder.
I'm pretty sure that only takes a few hours, a day, tops. And considering the wide reach Fennec has, he could contact you at any time.
I know. I'm just looking for any excuse. But I know Irene is right. He's messing with me. With us. But we aren't the victims here. Audrey and Natalie are. His muffin finished, my amazing boyfriend leaned in, gently uncrossed my arms, and took my hand.
They are. We won't let him get away with this, babe.
With his other hand, he rubbed my jittery leg until it relaxed. Irene grabbed a napkin and started wiping up all the tea I'd jolted out of her mug.
Sorry, Auntie dearest.
It's just tea, she said, setting aside the sopping napkin.
I just wish I could do some...
A blood-curdling scream rose from behind us as the coffee door opened. I grabbed my ears as a very angry toddler passed by our table, his mother looking dazed. Holy harpies, they probably heard that across the country. I sat up straight, an idea blooming. Irene smirked at Rudy.
She's got that look in her eye.
Yep, she's planning something.
Heck yes, I am. We're done waiting. Let's go back to your house, Irene. To do what, hon? She asked, her tone wary. I gave her a devilish little smile. To get Fennec's attention. Chapter 2
Daughter.
I ground my teeth. Just hearing that word out of his nefarious mouth enraged me. He could call me daughter all he wanted, but he'd never be a real father.
Fennec, it took you long enough.
A snort shot up my nose, causing the pile of snot hanging out in there to get sucked back into my sinuses. I coughed. I'd been crying on and off for days. 4 days. 4 days of salty cheeks and a runny nose. It took me long enough? You've got to be kidding me.
I expected you to act earlier. You are my offspring, after all. Swifts don't wait around. We take action.
Offspring? Seriously? I'm not a Swift.
You can deny it all you want, but that raw power you displayed yesterday comes from my line.
At Coffee, my comment about the toddler's scream being heard across the country had reminded me of the psychic wave I'd sent far and wide after my dogs had been kidnapped a few months back. That wave had gotten Fennec and Fawn's attention, so why not try again? In Irene's living room, I'd sat on a meditation poof, tuned into the energy plane, and tried to push as much power out as I could. It had not worked. The only good thing to come from hours of trying had been a list of new exclamations my frustration had prompted me to invent. My favorite was, noodly nincompoops.
Eventually, we decided that sitting in a meditative position and calmly trying to force a psychic wave might not be the best tactic. So, we'd taken another approach. My psychic burst a few months back had been motivated by sheer terror, so my aunt and boyfriend tried to scare the schnoodles out of me. Loud noises had not worked. Horror movies had not worked, though one had invaded my dreams that night. Irene had disappeared into her bedroom while Rudy and I debated dinner options. A couple minutes later, she'd called out to me. "Alara, can you come help me with something?" "Of course." I'd paused to stretch my tight muscles before heading down the dark hall. "What do you need?" Something wrapped in black fabric had flown out at me, hitting me in the face and scratching my cheek. It had clung to me as it made an ungodly, high-pitched sound rivaled only by my screams. I tried to throw the thing off, spinning in a circle, but it hadn't worked. I'd sensed the boys running at me from the living room, but Rudy grabbed them before they could help me. "Use it, Alara!" Irene had yelled. "Push your heartbeat up and dive into the energy field." The thing had finally detached from me. Trusting that Irene and Rudy had control over whatever beast had attacked me, I'd sunk to the floor and thrust my fear into the energy field, my mind screaming. I hadn't been as afraid anymore, though, so I put all my anger, all my frustration, into the mind scream. When my emotions had finally petered out, I'd opened my eyes to find Rudy standing over me, Irene panting as she leaned on the hallway wall, and Brighton sitting on the floor wearing a black scarf like a cape. "That was quite fun," the cat had said. "I think I'll scare humans more often. My talents are wasted sitting around here all day." I'd stared at him as I tried to catch my breath. "Good job, Brighton. You scared me better than these two could," I'd said, gesturing to Irene and Rudy. "Well, it was Irene's idea," Rudy had pointed out. "She texted me from the bedroom to tell me she'd explained the situation to Brighton and thought he'd understood her." He'd looked at her. "The scarf was a good call. Brighton blended in with the dark hallway." She'd nodded. "Thanks. I thought it was a good idea myself." "Let's not forget who the real star of the show was," Brighton had groused. Only I'd been able to hear him, so I repeated his words and then placated him. "That's right. You were the real star of the show." Rudy'd chuckled. "He sure was, but did it work?" "Oh, yes," Irene had told us. "It wasn't as strong as the disturbance from a few months ago, but I bet it's enough to get Fawn and Fennec's attention." Considering the 5 a.m. call from Fennec, it had been enough. Annoyed by my father's arrogance about the source of my abilities, I scoffed. "That's quite the assumption. I like to think my abilities come from my mother's side." He laughed, each guffaw grating my eardrums. "Your mother isn't a weak psychic, but she's no match for me." "Whatever, this is pointless. Tell me what I need to do to get back the abductees." I put as much venom into the word as I could. "Don't forget what else is on the line. Slip up, and we'll make sure you're charged with murder. And we'll make your boyfriend, and maybe his sister and her husband, an accomplice." Just as the prophecy said, he was threatening my people. "How could I forget? Just tell me about the task, please." Blueberry crawled up the bed and put his head on my shoulder, pushing his love through our connection. Such a sweetheart. "4 weeks ago, one of my most trusted lieutenants died of a gunshot wound. The police have failed to solve her murder. I sent my own team, but they made little progress. Solving murders seems to be your specialty, so now it's your turn." I took a deep breath, finding myself relieved. What the heck had become of my life that I was relieved to be solving a murder? I hadn't known what kind of task to expect, and I'd been worried he'd want me to attack someone's mind or commit some kind of art heist. At least solving a murder was a familiar task that, hopefully, wouldn't hurt anyone.
Why don't you find the killer, since you're the king of psychics? In a patronizing tone that I'm glad wasn't part of my childhood, he said,
Alara, I don't do fieldwork anymore.
Too busy planning world domination?
Enough. This is your task.
Not wanting to piss off the man holding my mother captive too much, I dropped the attitude. Okay, I'll do my best to find her killer. Where did the murder occur? What information do you have for me?
She oversaw my Southwest operations from her home in Tucson. Fawn will fill you in on the details.
He hung up. Not even 10 seconds later, Rudy's doorbell rang and the boys went wild, Blueberry stepping on my bladder as he jumped up. Rudy tried to wrangle them while I ran to the door in my pajamas to find Fawn on the other side of the peephole. I threw open the door. I have to pee, so you'll have to wait. Then I slammed the door in her face. Chapter 3.
So, you didn't go to California?
Fawn shot me a toothy, evil smile. Not yet. Father wanted me to wait until you were prepped about the murder. We stood on Rudy's porch, both our arms crossed. It was a bit breezy, so Fawn's long blonde hair swayed behind her burgundy bomber jacket. The crisp January air made me wish I'd grabbed a hoodie. Maybe I should just knock you out and hold you hostage until Fennec releases my mother and Natalie, I told her. She laughed, a breathy sound that reminded me of Fennec's. You could try. I've been in martial arts training since I could walk. Trust me, you wouldn't win. Even your ripped boy toy in there would have a hard time subduing me. Besides, a cop and his girlfriend kidnapping someone doesn't sound like the smartest plan. She was right. We wouldn't kidnap her, but it sure was fun to imagine. I moved on. Tell me about the murder, Fennec said the victim oversaw the Southwest from Tucson. Fawn nodded. Yep. Shay Cozen was found dead by her house cleaner 4 weeks ago. Why does Fennec want someone to look at the murder now instead of when it happened? He ordered the murder investigated right away, but none of our team members in Tucson have made real progress, she hesitated. Once the police vacated, they entered the house, but it has a psychic barrier around it. They can't get any kind of psychic reads in or around the house, and neither can I. I let my eyes widen and put a hand on my chest. I don't believe it. The great Fawn Swift bested by a psychic barrier? No way. I had no idea what a psychic barrier was, but that was beside the point. With narrowed eyes, she said, We don't know yet if you can get around the barrier, so don't get too giddy. I have no doubt I would have figured it out with more time, but he needed me to handle you. And now you have to go cloak my mother and Natalie. Yep. They've been moving around the last few days. They'll all be much more comfortable once I can cloak them. They can really settle in somewhere. She flashed her teeth at me. I bet the handcuffs are so comfortable. I cracked my knuckles. Well, I guess I better go use my super-powered abilities to get through the barrier and find the killer. You know, since you couldn't do it. I had no idea if I'd be able to do that, but it was fun to taunt her. Here, she held out a piece of paper, which turned out to have Shay's address and the name and number of one of their little psychic minions in Tucson on it. Phil's expecting you to contact him. Oh, and here's a key. She produced a gold key on a cactus keychain. Fawn wiggled her fingers. Toodles! Wait, you're leaving? That's all the info I get? She called over her shoulder as she left the porch. Since you're such a great and talented psychic, that should be more than enough info. Fudge fries. Maybe I should have been nicer. I mumbled to myself as I retreated into the house. Chapter 4. My ripped boy toy, as Fawn had called Rudy, had a shift doing homeless outreach,
So Irene, myself, and two huge bags of baked goods loaded into her car for the drive to Tucson. Now that we had an actionable task, my appetite returned. The boys were with a pet sitter I'd used before, so I knew they'd be happy campers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?